Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
I have a fear that Obama will win re-election. And the reason I say that is because the bland played on. And so I ask you, what would you do if Obama wins re-election? What would you do? I mean, I heard things in the past of what people would do if various presidents won on the left or the right. They'd leave the country. They'd do this. They'd do that. How would you change your life if the most... I don't want to say left-wing, because this is not a left-wing government in the sense that we know it. This is the first naked Marxist that we've ever had in the White House. It's the first Marxist presidency on a minor scale at this point, but not so minor when you consider he passed the NDAA. Which gives him the right, the sole right, the tyrannical right, the authoritarian right, to arrest an American citizen, even to execute them without trial. I don't think you understand what's happening in front of your eyes, but what will you do if Obama wins re-election? I have a fear he may win re-election, and I'll tell you why. I was reading a blog at Harvard Law blog, and they say that people are afraid of change and will favor an incumbent if one is available. They say Obama ended the Iraq war and he will get credit for it. They say Americans know in their hearts that Obama is not responsible for the stagnant economy. Now, that's all true for the average person. Those who have studied this administration recognize it is the most corrupt in American history. I only have to say the word Solyndra, but that's only the tip of the iceberg. The economy is not growing at all. So what does Mitt Romney offer, assuming he becomes the Republican opposition? Well, he could say that he's a businessman, which is true, but his business record will be analyzed and sifted and sorted, and by the time the deviants on the left get through with him, they will make his business record look anything but what he wants it to be. The fact of the matter is there's a lot of problems in this country that have more to do with the people than it does with the individual leading the country. There happen to be an awful lot of Americans who on average don't really work that hard and haven't achieved very much. In other words, they're lazy and they're losers. The fact of the matter is you can blame the politicians all you want, but if you look around the world, you can see that we are out of control. As they point out in this blog, a country has people who earn a median wage of $16.27 per hour, and they cannot afford to pay $100,000 to $200,000 a year in pensions to policemen and firefighters who retire at 42 or 50 after rigging the system. Retiring with medical benefits based upon false illnesses that they claim they got in their last year of service. We know that we can't afford our massive military or unlimited payments to Medicare providers without taxing people at 100% of their income. We know that we cannot afford to pay working-age people to sit home and watch television and collect 99 weeks of unemployment benefits. We know that China is growing 10% per year. Why? Because businesses there have employees who have a better education and a better work ethic than the idiot children who are coming out of our schools. We know that countries like Singapore now enjoy a higher per capita income than the United States does. Why? Because they can deliver basic government services at a tiny fraction of the cost as a percentage of GDP because they're not bound by union criminality. We know that our public schools are set up to benefit teachers and administrators rather than students and unions, and therefore the outlook for competitiveness has gotten worse, not better, with the advent of this twisted, topsy-turvy system. And so therefore, if you look at our politicians, if you look at Romney or you look at Obama or you look at any of the others, what do you think is going to happen? And I raise the question, if Obama wins re-election because of all of what I've just said to you, what will you do? Will you change your life? Will you leave the country? Will you go along as you have gone on? because as the bland played on, it looks very much to me as though Obama is the real winner. The Republicans are killing each other, as we have said.
Listen to clip 20. This is Obama. Our military will be leaner. Listen to this.
So, yes, our military will be leaner, but the world must know the United States is going to maintain our military superiority with armed forces that are agile.
You know what? He can't even say the word. He can't even lie anymore. He'd stumble on the word superiority. You got to understand, this guy hates the U.S. military. He has a vendetta to destroy the military. That's all he wants to do. And with the kind of leadership that we don't have in politics and the lack of leadership we have in the military because they've all been culled out, they've been thrown out of the military if one of them showed any signs of testosterone. They're just like Romney. The entire leadership in the U.S. military may as well be Mitt Romney. I'm telling you, that's what it looks like to me. When have you seen a vociferous guy like a, never mind a Patton, a MacArthur? Nobody. They don't exist. They're all get-along, go-along kind of corporate guys. They'll do whatever the president says without a word, without a peep out of them. Now, you're saying, well, what would you do about the fact that we're broke and we can't afford the military? Well, that's an intriguing question. Number one, what you got to do is cut back on the medical care for the entire family of every military person. It's medical care, medical care, medical care that is killing this country. There's an entitlement mentality about what you are entitled to from a government or from a union that is out of touch with reality. Nobody has ever been afforded this level of care in the history of the world because nobody can afford this. This entitlement for medical care pharmaceuticals is what's killing not only the country, but killing the military. That's what I believe. And then I want to talk about pensions for a minute because, you know, right now it's very popular to bash public employee pensions. And I'm all for it, but not with regard to cops. I thought about it in great detail. And, you know, you say, well, look, we can't afford these pensions for cops. I would separate out the police pensions. I would certainly crack down on the corrupt police who spend the last few months of the last year building up their pension with a fake illness. I would crack down on that. I wouldn't cut police pensions. I'll tell you why. If you ever looked at the weaponry that the thugs, the gangbangers, are carrying in the streets of this country, if you ever looked at the fact that they outgun our police, you've got subhuman morons in the streets of these cities with submachine guns, 223s that could penetrate a police car, and our poor police are running around with a 40 caliber handgun with maybe 12 or 14 shots in it. You've got gangbangers boasting that the police are running away from them because they outgun them. And you're telling me the police are not entitled to their pensions? You are wrong. Why don't you strap on a police uniform one day and take a ride through one of these neighborhoods? Because you've got a war going on in the streets of America. And frankly, we need more than police. We need the U.S. military in the streets of America to seize the guns of the gangbangers. You heard me. Seize the guns of the gangbangers. Because the police are getting knocked off like flies. I'll be right back.
Wait, hang on before I go.
Mother's Day is coming up. Now is the time to show all the moms in our lives how much we appreciate them. Our mothers, mothers-in-laws, wives. Now's the time to make them feel special. With a beautiful floral bouquet from 1-800-Flowers.com. Moms are going to love the rose and lily bouquet from 1-800-Flowers.com. She'll love this beautiful bouquet from 1-800-Flowers.com. 1-800-Flowers.com has a very special offer just for my listeners. You order the rose and lily bouquet and you get a free clear vase for only $34.99. That's $25 off the regular price. For this or other Mother's Day offers, go to 1-800-Flowers.com. Click on the radio microphone in the upper right corner and enter Savage. Or call 1-800-Flowers and mention my last name, Savage.
Savage.
I think what I'm going to do is going to put on the life coach hat. I told you there's a new trend where people are bypassing state licensing and they're becoming what's known as coaches. People who are such idiots who would pay them, I don't understand it, but it's a big trend. Apparently they charge a fortune. You call them up like you have a trip to and you really hate your children. You don't want to be with them. And you're feeling conflicted about going anywhere with them, skiing. You don't want to be in the room with them. The thought of it is giving you claustrophobia and hives.
but you're afraid to tell anybody because they'll think that you're a bad person, so you don't know who to turn to. You're afraid to even turn to a psychiatrist for fear they'll turn you into to the state. So you're going to a life coach. You're paying them $300 an hour. So an hour before you get in the car, wherever you're going to go to, like the Poconos to go skiing, you call Roberta Life Coach, and she tells you, don't worry, it'll be okay. Just take some pills and drink. And you say, I feel much better. So I'm going to be Life Coach Mike now for about the next segment on the Savage Nation. If you have a life problem that you would like answered, give me a ring at 1-800-449-8255. If you're lucky enough to get on the show, you're going to get thousands of dollars of advice for nothing. For 2 cents plain, you're going to get it. I'm serious. You know how good I am at this because I have common sense. There's one thing Donald Trump said about me that I liked. It's the only thing he said about me that I liked because the only thing he ever said about me is I was at Mar-a-Lago. Someone invited me to a lunch there. It was a very nice lunch. And Donald Trump arrived on the scene, and everyone clustered around him because he's the king. It's his place. And he runs a great place, by the way. So I don't know how he looked over at me, and he almost like benighted me with like a wand, a mental wand. He said, Michael Savage, you've got common sense. You go beyond politics, he said. You've got common sense. You could literally feel the crowd go, ooh, you know what I'm saying? And all the billionaires started to cluster around me. They wanted to walk with me into the dining room after that. It was safe to be with Michael Savage because I had common sense. I was no longer politically, I was no longer a political outcast. So why don't you try my common sense? If you've got a problem or you want to talk, if you really rather talk about the news, go ahead. I've thrown out 100 news stories. You don't seem to care about Wisconsin and that Obama sent out the buses and the rent-a-children. Like some dude, that's the governor, who is simply asking the teachers and other employees to pay 5.8% of their salary toward their own pension, which is about the private sector national average, and about 12% of the health care benefits should be paid by them, which is about half the private sector national average. And, of course, the union goons are saying that he's a Nazi and Hitler because he wants to balance the budget. New York, first call on Dr. Mike. Peter on WOR, thank you for calling. There's the Dr. Mike hat is on. What's on your mind?
Dr. Mike, how are you, sir?
Yeah, what's on you? What's your question for the life coach?
This is my problem, Dr. Mike. I was a city teacher, and I had to leave the profession because of the liberals that I was surrounded by. The liberals making excuses for the current nanny state that we have in New York. I don't know if you know, but they're trying to ban smoking even. In public places, outdoors.
Oh, yeah, they're banned it in the middle, and they banned it in prisons so that they would be, listen to this. The poor guys are locked up for X years of their life, so they ban smoking in prisons, and guess what they put them on? Medication instead of cigarettes. And take a guess who benefits from putting these prisoners on medication. The drug companies. Okay, so anyway, so what's the question?
Well, also, right now there's a budget issue with Mayor Bloomberg, and he wants to lay off teachers. I left the profession, but he's trying to lay off teachers. And
so you
and
took an early buyout. So what's the question? You did already what you had to do.
Right, right. Well, my question was, how do I deal? Because when I explain to liberals, because you know how combative and miserable they are in general.
Oh, miserable human beings.
They are
miserable. All of them grew up hating the world. They had miserable parents with oil cloth underneath it, and they taught them that America's no good, capitalism is evil, all businessmen are thieves, everything is bad. Then they sent them to camps in the Poconos on some union camp for red diaper dopa baby children, and they turned out to be horrendous women and men. So what do you want to know, how to deal with them?
Sometimes I just need to know, I mean, do I count to 10? What do I do? Because I just...
Well, you do the way I did, move out of New York. Well, that doesn't help because I'm in a worse city than New York. You see, New York's actually a better city than San Francisco because you have such a large population that you might encounter a sane person. 1 out of 5 might be sane. 4 out of 5 are psychotic liberals. But 1 out of 5 might be a patriotic American. San Francisco, it's 10 out of 9 are psychotic. So I become a hermit and just talk to my dog and ride my bicycle and do my radio show and write my books. What else is there to do? You know how I approach life now, Peter? Honest to God, people will disappoint you no matter what their politics are. The truth is that it's the fault of the apple. You know what I'm saying? It's the fault of the apple. The crystal is blemished. There's no perfection on earth. And if you're going to look for happiness through people, you're never going to find it. If you look for happiness in yourself, you're never going to find it. The trick is to stop looking for happiness. If you're eating and you don't have cancer or a disease and no one in your family has been struck by lightning, so to speak, consider yourself a lucky man. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I'm very happy. I'm a very happy person, and that's what I think they don't like.
Oh, they want to know why you're happy.
Yes,
They want to steal your joy.
Yes.
Well, why don't you just not hang around with them? I had to drop friends throughout my whole life. You know when I really thrived in life was way back in the 80s. I had to drop some friends. I liked them. They were very nice people. But they were all very liberal and very locked into their doctrines, and I had to leave every one of them to get away from their mentality because I knew I couldn't thrive if I maintained friendships with them. I literally had to pull them out of my being, out of my head, in order to get ahead in life. I had to dump them all, and I did. I'm at the same phase of my life right now. The few people I talk to, I'm going to stop talking to completely because I feel myself paralyzed by them, and it has almost nothing to do with their politics. This is another story, by the way. It has almost nothing to do with politics. At a certain point, you have to molt in your life. Various stages, people have to molt, and then there's no age attached to it. And in order to do so, you literally have to leave behind you everything that is familiar. I'm very serious about that. You can do this at age 70. It doesn't matter how old you are. Just disconnect yourself from the people who you know, and you're going to meet new people because nature abhors a vacuum, Peter. You'll find other ideas, other interests, and other people coming into your life, Peter. If not, there's always toy poodles. This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Wait. Hang on before I go. Back in September, we all paused to remember the 9/11 attacks. That one day changed the very way we all live and think. In fact, the Red Cross now recommends that we have a surplus of food in case of disaster, weather, or power outages. That's why I recommend and personally use WiseFoodStorage.com. WiseFoodStorage.com provides affordable and complete delicious ready-made meals for emergencies or even camping. I know more about food than anybody in radio. These foods are nutritionally sound for good health. Visit WiseFoodStorage.com. Get a free entree sample by entering the promo code SAVAGE. WiseFoodStorage.com or call 855-FOODWISE. And be sure to mention SAVAGE for a free sample and free shipping on any order.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
This is a battlefield that we must stand upon. And we need to let President Obama, Harry Reid, Nancy Pelosi, take your message of equality of achievement, take your message of economic dependency, take your message of enslaving the entrepreneurial will and spirit of the American people somewhere else. You can take it to Europe, you can take it to the bottom of the sea, you can take it to the North Pole, but get the hell out of the United States of America.
Whoa. Ooh, someone got mad. Somebody got mad, and that someone joins us right now, one of my favorites in Congress, Congressman Alan West. An honor to have you on the Savage Nation.
Well, Dr. Savage, it's great being back on with you and sharing with the Savage Nation. Thank you.
Well, there's a lot to be said here. I'm sure that people are outraged that you dare say a thing like this. What's the heat been like?
Well, you know, I don't care about the heat because I have to tell the truth. And I think that there are times when you have to tell the American people what they need to hear and not what they may want to hear. And we don't need to sugarcoat this anymore. There is a message out there that is the antithesis to everything that we are as a constitutional republic, and it does not belong here on these shores. And I think that if this message continues to permeate throughout our nation, we're looking at the future, the legacy of this America that we should be all in love with, be lost for our children and grandchildren.
Absolutely. In fact, if Obama is not stopped at the ballot box, we're going to lose the nation completely. Look at this story, Congressman West. Obama administration offers $75,000 grants to sign up more food stamp recipients. Can you believe a thing like this?
Yeah, well, once again, you have to get inside of his head.
and also the head of the Liberal Progressives. If they can get more people dependent upon them, dependent upon government, than there are out there producing, then they're going to win. It's just a sheer numbers game. And I think that when you go back and you read a book like Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand, or you read many of your books, you see exactly the roadmap that these guys have, and that is to get more people on food stamps. You've seen a 16% increase of people on the poverty rolls. To get more people that are sitting back saying, what will the government do for me, instead of unleashing that entrepreneurial spirit and American will, which is what I talked about, and that's what we have to get back to.
Over the last 3 years, Congressman, the number of Americans on food stamps has skyrocketed by two-thirds. Mm-hmm. It stands at a record high. 46 million citizens, or one out of seven people in the U.S., is on food stamps. But apparently that's not enough for the Obamaites. They want more people, and they're offering $75,000 grants to groups who devise strategies to increase program participation. Why in the world are they allowed to get away with this? Where is Congress?
Well, you know, that's one of the things that we have to stand up and fight against. You know, when Newt Gingrich said food stamp president, he tried to get some heat. I went on news shows, and I said he's absolutely right. So I think that one of the things we have to look at is they have to come to the House of Representatives. We're the keepers of the purse, and we just won't allow them to have that. And
Yes. I'm sorry. So they can't just do this by fiat, give out that grant?
No, they can't do it. There are things that they can do by regulatory fiat, and I think you see that coming out of the NLRB. You see that coming out of the EPA. But you just can't start writing off money. He's out campaigning all over the country. So, you know, creating a budget is not that important since we've gone close to about 1,007 days without having one.
What do you need a budget for? You have, if you have Air Force One and a host of servants in the White House, what do you need a budget for? The nation comes last. Congressman, a caller asked me about you and your district, and she said, she alleged, and I think it's true, that your fellow Republicans are going to gerrymander your district out from under you. Is there any truth to that?
Yes, right now that seems to be the case. The Republicans in Florida have a supermajority in the House and the Senate. They have taken my district and made it about 4 to 5 percentage points stronger for Democrats. And I can't explain it. I don't understand it. There were many great citizens down here that are constituents of this district that supplied them with maps that would have met all the legal standards of Amendment 6 down here and also the Voting Rights Act. But, you know, it is what it is, and I'll just have to fight hard.
But why are they doing it? Is it because you're too conservative? They say because you're a Tea Party favorite? The Republican Party, is that disconnected from the will of their own base that they would do this?
Well, I think that you would probably have to call the Speaker of the House designate there and the President of the Senate, call the folks in the Florida legislature and ask them, because I can't explain it. And as a matter of fact, I'm just trying to do my best to be a good congressional representative for the people here. As a matter of fact, we had a hearing down here about this oil rig that is about to be in place about 60 miles off Florida shore, which the Obama administration has been providing technical advice and guidance. It's a Chinese-made rig. It's a Spanish company, and they're going to start drilling off the coast, something that we're not allowed to do.
What in the heck? I know that there are something like 9 foreign nations drilling in the Gulf of Mexico, yet Obama prohibits Americans from drilling in the Gulf?
Yeah, well, that's in the Gulf. We're talking actually right off of Cuba's coast. And if you understand the Gulf Stream, and this is in waters that are deeper than Deepwater Horizon, if there is a catastrophic event, you're looking at South Florida just being absolutely decimated and our economy being destroyed.
Astounding what's going on in this under this administration. And,
I have to agree with your
emotional outburst when you said they should leave the country, because they do not represent American values. There's no question. That's what you meant.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And, you know, I didn't, you know, direct that toward individuals. I directed it toward their message. Their message of equality of opportunity, that's not America. America's about equality of achievement. America's about equality of opportunity. Their message is about economic dependency. America is about economic freedom. And, of course, how they are enslaving the entrepreneur will, which is causing so many small businesses to close up so that Americans have to be more dependent upon government. I want to unleash that entrepreneurial spirit and get capital flowing out here so we can get more storefronts open back up. So
Congressman, why do you think that the Democrats chose such a I'm going to try to use a polite description of Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Why have they chosen such a provocative, angry, distasteful human being to be their chairman?
Well, I think that, you know, my colleague from down here in Florida, she represents the liberal progressives that are now running the Democrat Party.
You mean they're just all mean-spirited, foul-mouthed attack dogs?
Well, I think that that's what you see. And I think, you know, the sooner that the Republican Party understands that this is a bare-knuckle fist fight, they will, you know, maybe be victorious in this upcoming election. But if they think that this is going to be a nice, simple, fair fight, I want to tell them a lesson that I learned from a Marine first sergeant by the name of Jim Reifinger. He said, if you ever find yourself in a fair fight, it's all because your tactics suck. This is not going to be a fair fight.
No, it isn't. And that's what worries me about Romney. When I heard about a few months ago, he said, oh, Obama's a good man. He's just over his head. I said, oh, my God. Here we go. It's John McCain. It's John McCain. It's John McCain all over again. That's why McCain lost in the last election.
Now, we can no longer be a punching bag for the liberals, and, you know, that's why I'm the number one target for the Democrat Party, because I see them for who they are, and I'm willing to call them out on it. I just hope and wish that my fellow Republicans from top to bottom will do the exact same and not isolate those of us who want to stand up for principle with pragmatic passion behind it.
Well, before you leave us today on the Savage Nation, what can people do who are concerned about what the Republicans are doing to you? That's what worries me. Here you are, a Republican star. You're a true conservative. You're a war hero. Why are they trying to cut the legs out from under you by redistricting your own district, meaning gerrymandering you out of business? What are they trying to achieve here?
If I could answer that, I would get $1 million. I think that, you know, maybe you can call up to the Florida legislature and see if they'd be willing to come on your show and explain it. And the good people in the Savage Nation can contact the Florida legislature and, you know, ask them a very simple question, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot.
I hear you. Congressman West, always a pleasure. By the way, I hope the next time you that I'm in Florida and you're down there, we can say hello again. In regards to your lovely family.
Oh, my family would love to see you again, sir, and thank you so much.
And by the way, I know what they like now for food.
Yeah, they're pretty simple.
No, I remember we had a whole bunch of Italian food out. Everybody liked the same exact dish. I didn't have enough of it.
No, it was great, and I look forward to breaking bread with you again.
All right, thank you again, Congressman Alan West. Imagine if we had, let's say, net 100%. Could you imagine what this country would be like if we had 25% of Congress as authentic frontline combat troops come back and want to serve America in Congress? Can you imagine the different world we'd be in? Can you imagine if 1% of reporters were former combat veterans instead of about 0.0001%? What a different country this would be.
Savage.
Mike Savage, life coach. Wisconsin Shannon, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I need help with the fact that I'm a hardcore Democrat. My husband is a hardcore Republican.
So what's the problem?
Well, every time there's something going on in our state or federal, like right now the situation in Wisconsin, it sparks huge arguments between the two of us.
So do what women have done for centuries, withhold sex.
Yeah, that doesn't work.
Why?
We have a six-month-old baby, so he doesn't have them very often anyways.
Well, that's what babies are for, aren't they? To keep the husband away.
It's the best birth control ever, that's for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the reasons women used to have babies every year or so was to make sure the husband left them alone. Well, I don't know what the problem is. You're not going to change his mind. He's not going to change yours. You're a communist and he's a Republican. What are you going to do? Well, I mean, is there any way for him to reach you with any reason? In other words, if your state is broke and bankrupt and the governor's asking teachers to pay a small amount towards their own pension and their own health care, does that not make sense to you? Where should the money come from?
From other...
Hello, where should the money come from?
There's other ways to cut spending.
Wait, hold on. What do you mean there are other ways to cut spending? Why is it that people who work for a private company contribute to their own pensions and their own health care, but government workers should not? Is that fair? You're a Democrat. You're a fair-minded Democrat. Why should state workers be exempt from sharing the burden of supporting themselves?
Teachers don't make very much for wages.
A very good point, but neither do people in the private sector today. At least they have a job in teaching. They have a job that's secure. That's better than a lot of people who don't have any job at all.
Understandable.
You see, Shannon, things have changed. The world is not what it was when your parents were alive. Thank you for the call. Oh, does that husband have trouble? I see there's no way to reason with people when they make... Salt Lake City, Ryan, what's your question for Dr. Savage?
Hey, Dr. Savage. I'm 33 years old. I have a bachelor's degree, but I'm thinking about going back to get my MBA. I just don't know if it's going to pay off in the long run. If I spend the $50,000 to get the MBA, is it going to pay off for me later on?
My suggestion is forget the MBA, spend $400 on a life coach degree, and become a life coach. You'll make more money faster.
That could be true.
I hear people are doing it. They're actually paying some people money to get some kind of, like, experience in being a life coach. How the heck can you become a life coach if you haven't lived?
Yeah, I don't know.
What are they going to advise people of if they haven't gone through it themselves? Now, as far as an MBA goes, I don't know. There was a time when it was a union card to a job in a corporation. Do MBAs really teach you today what you need to know in this economy? I can't answer that question. Do you have a family business, perhaps, that you're thinking of taking over, or you got to create your own business?
Well, as of right now, I'm already employed, and it's always kind of been a dream of mine to be an entrepreneur and maybe start a business. But
Then why do you need an MBA? An MBA requires a good idea, some money, and the ability to go ahead and do it. You don't need an MBA for that. I mean, you need to know the basic principles of a business, marketing, etc. You need to know how to do that, but I don't know that you don't need a degree for that today. You could go on the internet right now and you could run a search that says what do I need to know to run a small business? Give me 10 steps. You can probably find it in about 30 minutes.
Yeah, and that's true, but I mean, if that doesn't work out, if I need to, you know, lean back on a larger corporation, will it give me
All right. That's another point. In other words, if you're looking to tomorrow in a more competitive marketplace, the MBA certainly would distinguish you from an applicant with an ordinary bachelor's degree. In that regard, yes, I'm always for that higher degree if it's from a decent university, and that's what you want. If on the other hand you're looking really to be an entrepreneur, you've got to think about what your best ideas might be. You know, the old statement: build a better mousetrap and people will be the door a path to your doorstep. It's still true, by the way. It is still true. In fact, even in a down economy, people are still spending money, right?
Right.
Okay. So it's not like suddenly no one's buying anymore. They're not trading like oyster shells for their dinner. They're spending money. So if you put out a better product in a restaurant, people are going to go to it at a good price. Or whatever I don't know what your ideas are. You have to start thinking about your ideas rather than the degree. I put my ideas ahead of my degrees. Then I'd worry about it. You could hire an MBA to be your partner. Hire an MBA who killed himself for 3 years and make him the CFO and give him a piece of the business. Let him figure out all the angles of the business if you have a good idea. And you could you could sidestep having to go to school.
All right.
I know some of the people I know who are the most successful, whether they be in the media or in business, never even went to college, by the way. And they are multimillionaires because they had a good idea and they were willing to invest their own time and energy and build that business. And it could still be done. As I say, even in a down economy, there are products that have not yet been invented that people who are looking for a way out of a down economy would if I was hungry for money right now, I could come up with 5 ideas to get people to follow me right now and to give them the hope that they might find a way out of the morass they're in. I wouldn't do it because I don't want to exploit anybody. But there are ways that you can come up with ideas every day of the week, Ryan. Good economy, bad economy, it doesn't matter.
All right, thank you.
Anyway, so the bottom line of my answer to you is this. If you're thinking of security and you want to go in a big corporation, yes, go for the MBA. If, on the other hand, you have a better mousetrap that you want to put out and market right now, go to work with an MBA, make him your CFO, give him a piece of the business. If he thinks it's good, give him a percentage and let him go out and raise the money and go sell it. Thanks for the call. I'd like a sex question right now. Oh, here we got one here. Alabama, Elaine, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Michael. My husband has not made or shown any interest in being intimate with me in 4 years or longer. And every time I pinpoint it and sit him down and question him about it, he will start cursing me and just jump up and leave the room. Mm. And so I was wondering what your...
How many years have you been together?
31.
Well, look, I don't want to make any jokes about it, but, you know, the romantic phase ended a while ago, correct?
Well, you, with me it was forced, but...
With you, what was forced?
It was forced to end with me because he's not interested. And I'm not about...
Well, hold on. So what is the basis of your relationship if it's not sexual? What keeps you together at all? You have something in common. There must be some reason. Is there a companionship element to the relationship at this point or not?
We're good friends.
Are you good friends? Do you fight all the time, or do you actually enjoy your company with him other than the sexual loss?
We enjoy each other's company other than that.
Well, let me tell you something. Elaine, you know, there's a little wisdom in what I'm going to tell you. You ask anyone going back any period of time, and they'll tell you that any long-term relationship primarily has to be based upon companionship. If you've got that, you've got 95% of the package, Elaine. A lot of people have sexuality. They have no relationship, though. They have no companionship and no care for each other. So sometimes you have to take what you have. I know the other side of you is dying. That's another story. I can't answer that one because I don't know what the dynamics are between you and your husband. So what I would say is forget the sexuality and work on the companionship and the kindness. See if you can enjoy each other. That's all.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
The useless Department of Homeland Security is keeping tabs on who is saying what on the conservative side of the aisle. Now, you say, well, they're monitoring all journalists. Nonsense. They really have to monitor ABC, CBS, or NBC, or CNN, which does their bidding. They're monitoring the minuscule small number of people who speak out against this government when this government steps out of line. And remember, it's the job of the people to keep the government in order. A government that is not kept in check will become an out-of-control rogue government. I have an excerpt in my hand from a book that I recommend called They Thought They Were Free by Milton Mayer, and it was written about the Germans between 1933 and 1945. The book is called They Thought They Were Free. You have to understand that what went on in Germany, what went on in every other dictatorship on earth, and what's going on right in front of your nose is going on here in America. It's not as if this administration wishes to become a dictatorship. It is this dictatorship that it is, and it's bringing you along step by step in ways that you can't even understand. I'll read it to you. What no one seemed to notice was the ever-widening gap after 1933 in Germany between the government and the people. Did you hear that? The widening gap between the government and the people. Does that ring true? What happened here was the gradual habituation of the people, little by little, to being governed by surprise, to receiving decisions deliberated in secret. Does that sound like Obama? Every night another secret? Every night another secret decision, to receiving decisions deliberated in secret, to believing that the situation was so complicated that the government had to act on information which the people could not understand, or so dangerous that even if the people could not understand it, it could not be released because of national security. I'm talking about Germany in the 1930s. Does it sound familiar to you? I will go on if you wish, because it's happening to you right in front of your eyes. I'm not suggesting that Obama plans on creating death camps. I am telling you, though, that he's absolutely on the road to a pure dictatorship. He is fascinated by the power he is able to grab because no one has stopped him. When he's gone from A to B in a tiny step, he wasn't stopped. When he crawled from B to C, he wasn't stopped. When he walked from C to D, he was not stopped. So he's now bounding from D to E and E to F and F to G. I'm telling you what's going on, and I'll quote again from Milton Myers, they thought they were free, the Germans 1933 to 1945. Would you like to hear one more sentence, or is this too much for you? Now, you have to ask yourself why Romney, Paul, why none of them are talking about Obama granting amnesty to 315,000 El Salvadorans. Now, it's not called amnesty. They were scheduled for deportation, but he just said he's not going to deport them because of an earthquake that occurred several years ago in their home country. Do you think that this is not an example of what his plan is for getting reelected, which is using the illegal vote? To me, it's as clear as a bell. I told you this a year ago. But you see, it's done step by step, day by day, and most people couldn't understand that a dictatorship did not grow overnight. Do you think when Hitler was elected, by at that time it was 32-33% of the vote, that's the number of Germans who voted for 33%, do you think overnight he created death camps? Do you think overnight he became a screaming mad dictator? He did not. It was done in ways you can't imagine. I'll quote again. To live in this process is absolutely not be able to notice it. Please try to believe me, he wrote. Unless one has a much greater degree of political awareness than most of us had ever had occasion to develop, each step was so small, so inconsequential, so well explained, or on occasion regretted, that unless one were detached from the whole process from the beginning, unless one understood what the whole thing was in principle, with all these little measures that no patriotic German could resent must someday lead to, no one more saw it developing from day to day than a farmer in his field sees the corn growing. One day, though, it is over your head. Your little men become your bosses and your dictators. All of these petty bureaucrats who you like to mock right now in the government are step by step becoming your little petty dictators, and you have no control over them. You have absolutely no recourse over them. You have no way to redress your grievances about what Obama is doing. Homeland Security is monitoring conservative journalists. They have a statement from the Department of Homeland Security, and here it says. It says the information can permit the identity of an individual to be directly or indirectly inferred, including any information which is linked or linkable to that individual. DHS, which does not know what its mission is, DHS is out of control. It's an out-of-control agency created by George Bush, by the way. It was created by George Bush, perhaps with decent intentions, although I don't really know what big government thinks. And right now, the DHS announces that the NCO and its Office of Operations Coordination and Planning can collect personal information from news anchors, journalists, reporters, or anyone who may use, quote, traditional and or social media in real time to keep their audience situationally aware and informed. What the hell does that mean? Why is DHS monitoring journalists? Why are they monitoring people in this country? That is not their job. Where is this intelligence collected by Janet Napolitano? Where is it going? Who is reviewing this data? Why are they doing this? Well, I said all I can say to you. The rest, of course, is not up to me. All I can say to you is this. Do you think that did you ever believe, you liberals, is this what you envisioned when voting for hope and change? That you'd wake up to a fascist dictatorship under the guise of anti-terrorism? Is this what you liberals wanted, hope and change? Because you, too, will be caught up in this web. Make no mistake about it. Make no mistake about it. If you think that it's only going to affect people who are conservatives or patriots or nationalists or right-wingers, you're crazy. You're out of your minds. Peter Niemöller was a cardinal in Germany who spoke for the thousands and thousands of Germans when he spoke after the war and said that when the Nazis attacked the communists, he was a little uneasy. But after all, he was not a communist, and so he did nothing. And then they attacked the socialists, and he was a little uneasier, but still he was not a socialist, and he did nothing. And then the Nazis attacked the school teachers, the press, the Jews, and so on, and Niemöller said he was a little uneasy at each step, but still he did nothing. And then when the Nazis attacked the church, because he was a cardinal and a churchman, he did something, but by then it was too late. You see, my colleague went on, one doesn't see exactly where or how to move. Believe me, this is true. Each act, each occasion is worse than the last, but only a little worse. You wait for the next and the next. You wait for the one great shocking occasion coming from Obama, thinking that others, when such a shock comes, will join with you in resisting him. You don't want to act or even talk alone. You don't want to go out of your way to make trouble. This is a wide open opportunity for the Republican field to run right across the field with a touchdown against the Obama administration. They could do that today. They could do it tonight. They could do it right now. And yet, they're not doing it. And why are they not doing it? Both political parties are owned by big money. Big money. And big money needs illegal alien labor. Illegal alien labor is fundamentally dictating this election. And anyone who goes against illegal alien labor is not going to win. That is why even Ron Paul, by the way, who is perhaps the most conservative in some ways and the most socialist liberal in others, that is why Ron Paul, the clever doctor that he is, has said almost nothing about illegal aliens. Have you noticed that? Have you heard one word coming out of anybody's mouth about the illegal aliens? No. And yet this, to me, as a talk show host, with my stethoscope being more accurate than any pollster in America, the number one issue emotionally in this country are the great millions of illegal aliens in this country. That is the greatest emotional issue that is not being exploited by the Republican field. Houston, Texas, Darren, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, love you, love your show. I want to tell you that you are the only person speaking out about this, drawing these parallels to Nazi Germany in the 1930s. And most Americans, Doctor, unfortunately, won't understand your references because they've never been taught history. You are 100% correct. Hitler, everybody thinks, well, Hitler was this horrible dictator, which he was. But he didn't seize power. It didn't happen overnight. It took him years to be, and he was given the chancellorship. And then he slowly took over the Reichstag. And then he passed all the laws that stripped the citizens of Germany.
Yes, it was done. It was done step by step, small step by small step. And some people saw it but didn't say anything. But listen to this from that book by Milton Meyer, They Thought They Were Free. It's an amazing thing because everyone listening to the show is going to identify this. He says, your friends put you down as pessimistic or even neurotic when you say something against your government. They try to intimidate you. So you're left with your close friends who are naturally people who have always thought as you have. And now in small gatherings of your closest friends, you feel that you are talking to yourselves, that you are isolated from the reality of things. This weakens your confidence still further and serves as a further deterrent to what? It is clearer all the time that if you are going to do anything, you must make an occasion to do it. And then you are obviously a troublemaker, so you wait and you wait. And you're waiting for that one great shocking occasion from the government to occur when tens or hundreds of thousands will join with you, but it never will come. That's the difficulty. If the last and worst act of the whole regime had come immediately after the first and smallest, millions would have been sufficiently shocked in Germany. If, let us say, the gassing of the Jews in 43 had come immediately after the German firm stickers on the windows of non-Jewish shops in 33. But, of course, this isn't the way it happens. In between come all the hundreds of little steps, some of them imperceptible, each of them preparing you not to be shocked by the next. Step C is not so much worse than step B. And if you did not make a stand at step B, why should you stop? Why should you at step C? And so on to step D. And one day too late, your principles, if you were ever sensible of them at all rush in upon you. The burden of self-deception has grown too heavy, and some minor incident, hardly a minor incident, collapses it all at once, and you see that everything has changed and changed completely under your nose. The world you live in, your nation, your people, is not the world you were born in at all. I can go on. I don't have to go on. It was written by Milton Mayer. The book is called They Thought They Were Free. It's about the German people between 33 and 45, And I am telling you that I see the same parallels in this country. When a president can grant billions and billions of dollars to cronies, and not one word of it is said, I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Wait, hang on. Before I go, how much money do you need to earn each month? Huh? That's what IncomeAtHome.com wants to know. They'll help you make that happen. IncomeAtHome.com is America's leading work-from-home business. They have an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau. They're affiliated with a multi-billion dollar company. Plus, they do business in over 80 countries. Your age, education, experience, it doesn't matter. You can do this. You can literally earn money on your computer from your kitchen table 24/7. Hey, look, if you're sick of living paycheck to paycheck, if you're worried about job security or retirement, if you're ready to make great money from home, part-time or full, IncomeAtHome.com is adding my listeners in record numbers. So check them out. Visit IncomeAtHome.com. Check them out. That's IncomeAtHome.com.
Savage.
Joyce in New York.
A couple of months ago, I heard you describe a dream where you were singing in the streets, and I was almost going to call then because I realized that I could interpret that dream, and that dream is that you are a messenger and that you have something to say. The dream that you just had is the Eastern symbolism is the current condition of the world. The lady that you saw leave before you is America.
Mm.
And the reason you don't want to go is because you're the last voice standing.
Oh, my God. What an interpretation that is. In other words, America's life has been sucked out of her by the imagery was very, very clear. It was an Egyptian tomb, and it was of a seated woman, as you would see in, you know what I'm saying, Egyptian pictograms from Egypt, ancient Egypt. They always showed seated individuals, or very often they showed them seated, right, in an L shape type of thing, like body, legs. And then she was brought next to that image, superimposed on the image. She fit perfectly, and they sucked her into it. I think that is the Arab Spring destroying America. In other words, this Arab Spring that we are being sold as one of the greatest lies in history, it was orchestrated by Jimmy Carter, Brzezinski, and those in a think tank funded by George Soros. It was documented in a 16-page essay that I wrote about a year ago. They were behind the overthrow of Mubarak and what is going on in the Middle East. Now, what is it that they're doing? Are they trying to destroy America knowingly or by accident? Just remember, it was Jimmy Carter who overthrew the Shah of Iran, and in so doing, brought back Ayatollah Khomeini, who was in exile in France, and that started the disease, the virus, the AIDS virus of societies across the world. Radical Islam was stirred up by Ayatollah Khomeini, and it was a result of Jimmy Carter's do-gooderness. Either Jimmy Carter didn't know this would happen, he did it because he thought the Iranian people were suffering from SAVAK. He didn't know that the Muslim terrorists who would take over the country were worse than SAVAK, the secret police. In other words, the Islamic fanatic secret police are worse than SAVAK. So now we see the same thing going on in Libya, going on in Egypt, and this country is being sucked into this by the media. So are you saying that's Lady Liberty being sucked into that vortex and I resisted going?
Yes, I am, and especially when you said that she went and she conformed. And that's America.
Well, she conformed to the image that the silhouette was just exactly in her dimensions, is the point. Listen to this.
Mother's Day will be here soon, and Michael Savage made sure Mrs. Savage is getting Sherry's Berries. Sherry's Berries aren't just impressive, they're delicious. And Michael Savage has a special offer from Sherry's Berries just for you. But you must order this week. Don't wait. Send giant dipped strawberries from Sherry's Berries starting at just $19.99. That's more than 40% in savings. Sherry's Berries are huge, fresh, and juicy. Just go to berries.com, click on the radio microphone, and type in Savage. And if you order now, Savage Radio listeners can double their berries for just $10 more. Don't be too busy for mom. Get Sherry's Berries starting at just $19.99. Call 866-FRUIT-02 or visit berries.com. Click on the microphone in the top right corner and click Savage. Order now. Offer expires midnight on Friday.
I'll be right back.
Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. We all love our warriors. We all love our heroes. We all know that they're the only thing that stands between us and a thousand years of darkness. And last year, August 6, 2011, more SEALs died in one incident than in the entire history of the SEAL unit. 29 rough, fearless warriors were put aboard a CH-47 Chinook helicopter in the black of night and sent off onto a mission from which they never returned. Joining us right now to talk about one of these SEALs are the parents of Special Ops Chief SEAL Aaron Carson Vaughn. Billy Vaughn, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. It's a privilege to be here.
First of all, Mr. Vaughn, all we can say is God bless you, and we send our condolences. I'm glad to see America can still produce heroes, but from my point of view, as simply as a talk show host, something is wrong with this picture. Why were so many SEALs put into a single old helicopter?
Well, I can tell you why they were put in the old helicopter. I can tell you why they were put in the CH-47. What we have been told is we don't have enough MH-47Gs for special ops to perform their missions right now. So I think, and this is my opinion based on information. So it's based on something at least. The special ops missions have been, and they've told us that they're ramped up. They've ramped them up so much because the conventional operation is winding down, and to make it look like to the American public that the war is winding down, that they just simply don't have enough special ops choppers, and they're flying with what they have. And that night they were using a CH-47, and so.
Well, let me ask you this: the MH-47 is a newer, faster machine.
I tell you what, sir. I can't tell you what the difference is between the MH-47G and the CH-47. I don't know anything about choppers, but what
I don't want to put you on the spot. The question to me, as a civilian whose heart was broken, even though it wasn't my son, thank God, and it was your son who you lost, one of America's best and brightest, and many others. They were all put into one helicopter. Why not three Chinook helicopters, for example?
What I can say about that is they wanted maximum power on the ground immediately, and I'm not going to say any more about that.
You don't want to impugn the military. I understand that. I mean, I get that.
Well, I mean, the military has explained that. I'll just tell you the truth. As far as what Karen and I know, the military has answered our questions satisfactorily, as far as we know. But the people in Washington have not. On the fact that the rules of engagement, they weren't even able to fire the AH-64 Apache in the sky when he saw the RPGs fired, was not able to return fire because of the rules of engagement set by this president, and at least that's what we're told. And then
oh
the
my
fact
God,
that they are not.
So you mean as the RPG was on the way toward the helicopter, the supporting helicopter, the Apache couldn't fire at the terrorist?
what we were told, this is what we were told on more than one occasion, because I asked and some other people asked the question several times, as the CH-47, as the Extortion 17 came into land, two Apaches were overhead watching everything that was going on, and we actually saw the videotape of the last minute and a half or so. We did not see the RPGs fire, but we could hear the audio from the Apache, and the Apache, one of the pilots, said, "Oh, so and so, there's an explosion. Oh, so and so, there's another one. Extortion 17 is down." That pilot saw the RPGs fired, we are told, and he was not able to fire on the men who fired the RPGs, because the rules of engagement stated that there could be friendlies in the same building as to where the fire came from. So he did not return fire.
Meanwhile, your son, Special Ops Chief Aaron Carson Vaughn, one of only 300 of America's most elite warriors and 29 other rough, fearless American warriors, are gone. There's never been no congressional investigation. So far as I know, it was covered up or dismissed immediately. Instead, we hear about a junkie singer who died after trying to commit suicide. I mean, it's sickening. To me, it's sickening that the junkies and the degenerates are given funerals and support and parades and guys like this. Well, I should stop, because it gets me crazy. And the fact of the matter is, you and your wife are making yourselves available to speak publicly across America, you say, in an effort to carry the torch that your son Aaron passed to them. What is it that you tell students, Mr. Vaughn, when you go out to speak?
Well, I tell you, Mr. Savage, actually, Karen speaks to the students, and if you would ask her that what her message is, she can say it better than I can.
Please. Karen Vaughn, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thank you very much for having us on tonight. My message to students is really simple. I want them to become more informed about what's happening in their government. I don't want them to be pawns in the hand of what's being fed to them by the liberal media. And I try to tell them to seek information, be informed, and to do your part in this world, to not sit back idly and let things happen around you with no action or recourse of your own, and especially don't be shameful enough to be completely unaware of what's happening.
Mrs. Vaughn, you say that although we cannot be engaged kinetically in the preservation of our republic as your son Aaron was, we now feel an obligation to become engaged culturally. That is a brilliant statement, and it's something that strikes a chord with me, because millions upon millions of Americans cannot become engaged kinetically to preserve our republic from all of the threats, internal and external, by the way. But they can become engaged culturally. Isn't that true?
That's exactly right. And I'll tell you something, Michael, that I really learned quickly as Billy and I launched this campaign to inform our circle of influence, is that people will listen to people they trust. There are people like you out there with mass audiences, but every single person isn't listening to you, right? And I wish they were, but they're not. But our circle of friends will listen to us, and they trust what we share. So I believe that everybody who is informed has not only a need to, but an obligation to get out there and spread the word if these things happen, especially Billy and I are taking up the cause of radical Islam in our country and the way it's taken over our country.
Right.
This
and yesterday,
very
yesterday,
concerning to us. Yes.
Well, that's right. Your son devoted his life to that.
And
the other day on the Continental Airlines plane, there were a couple of Islamic guys screaming Allah Akbar. They had to be subdued not by the Homeland Security, not by TSA, but by ordinary men from Texas,
right,
who jumped up and subdued them.
Right,
Thank God.
Because our country has become impotent in this entire battle. They have become completely impotent with political correctness, and it's nauseating as a mother of a son who gave his life to fight it.
Mr. and Mrs. Vaughn, didn't your son leave behind a wife and children?
He did.
A wife and two little children, yes.
Is there a foundation? Is there any place that my listeners who have the biggest hearts in the country can make a donation? Do you have a website? Is there anything online where they can go and do something?
There is a Facebook page that's set up for Aaron, and there's information on there on how to donate to his children to a fund that, his wife has set up in their honor. And if you look for In Memory of Navy SEAL Aaron Vaughn on Facebook, you can find that page, and the information will be there for making donations. Thank you very much for asking that. Thank you.
In Memory of Navy SEAL Aaron Vaughn, V-A-U-G-H-N. In Memory of Navy SEAL Aaron Vaughn. I recommend to all of my listeners who want to engage culturally to defend this country, because the government is too busy having a blues festival in the White House to pay any attention to this. A government that took a White House and turned it into a frat house, in my opinion. Don't get me started on that. But, okay, here we are. We the people have to do it. And you gave the ultimate. You gave the ultimate to this country. You gave the ultimate. And for people to sit back and say they can't do anything is utter nonsense. They can. And I'm going to recommend everybody listening to this show seek out that website, that Facebook page. And can I make a recommendation, Mrs. Vaughn? When you get around to it, set up a website that's very easy for people to remember. And if you want, I'll help you do it. And I'll put it up on my website absolutely free of charge so that the children who don't have a father have a little something to help them get through life.
Right. Thank you. We will do that. Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
I don't want to pull you into this any deeper. I can imagine the depth to which you have already gone.
Mr. Savage.
Yes.
I'd like to say a couple other things. I don't want to say anything. I don't have anything to say at all about the military, but I'm engaged now culturally, and I'm working with the United West. And they are an organization that is fighting radical Islam. And Aaron, you know, Aaron was fighting radical Islam abroad. We need to fight it here at home because it is infiltrating us like a bad cold. I mean, it's just coming.
They're advising the FBI. They're telling the FBI director what they can say about radical Islam.
That is correct. And we have an administration that I cannot figure out the reason why they are so sympathetic to them, but it is among us, and it is going to overtake us if we don't wake up. And that's why we said on our website that we are engaged culturally. We have to win the war here in America. They know they cannot defeat us abroad. Their plan is to win the war right here, to soften the battlefield until they can do it right here. And I'd like to say two things in defense of the military while I'm on the phone. I'd appreciate it. One is I'm sick and tired of people like Hillary Clinton and Leon Panetta and Jay Carney and people like that talking about our Marines because they urinate on Taliban. I'm not saying I would do that. I'm not saying it's right. But I'd like to see somebody in Washington, D.C. stand up for our military. And John McCain doing the same.
Mr. Vaughn, I wrote an article about this for USA Today. I was surprised that they let me do it. But I took the position of exactly your position about the alleged incident that after a firefight, we don't know what happened. How many Marines were shot, killed, blown up? After the firefight, the men who risked their lives peed on some corpses, and I'm supposed to get upset at them? Are you kidding me?
Exactly right. Let me tell you something, Mr. Savage. On the night that our son's chopper was shot down with the 29 other Americans, all that the AH-64 could do was fire suppressive fire to keep the enemy away from the bodies of the warriors. And you know why they do that? Because they will mutilate the bodies. They will mutilate the bodies. Nothing is said about that. All we have is somebody like Hillary Clinton saying, these are not our American values. I doubt Hillary Clinton has any American values that are the same as mine.
Amen. I don't think she knows what an American value is. She's hardly in this country. She's too busy placating the greater world. Because after all, she's a citizen of the world, Mr. Vaughn. You can't expect her to pay much attention to the little old country called the U.S. of A.
That's exactly right. And now today, one more time, Mr. Savage, we have an American general in Afghanistan apologizing again for our troops.
Oh, my God. We played that yesterday. It set off a shockwave, Mr. Vaughn. Did you hear that soundbite?
Here again, though, as far as I can understand, we did what was right. They were not supposed to write in the Qurans, and then they are according to...
Absolutely. These Qurans were part and parcel of materials that were in the holding cells, or the cells, rather, of the equivalent of prisoners of war, who were then released from their cells, and their books were burned because they had messages in them. How hard is that for the general to understand?
I just don't get it, sir.
Well, look, I think we both see the picture. Unfortunately, it may be as ugly as we fear. It may not just be political correctness. Some of us think that the government, or at least some in the government, are playing for the other team. And we should leave it at that, because there's only so far we can go on an open microphone to millions of Americans. Again, I want to repeat, for those of you who are listening, we are speaking with the parents of one of the brave, heroic Americans who was unnecessarily killed on August 6, 2011, when he and 29 other fearless American warriors were put into a CH-47 Chinook in the black of night and never came back. And his name, that you never forget it, is Aaron Carson Vaughn. And he has a Facebook page that his wife set up. Maybe the people can find it. And what is the Facebook page again, please?
In memory of Navy SEAL Aaron Vaughn.
Now, do you folks have your own website?
We do. We do. That site is For Our Son. That's FOROURSON.US. ForOurSon.US.
God bless Billy and Karen Vaughn, and in the memory of Aaron Carson Vaughn, I take a quick break.
Wait, hang on. Before I go, let me ask you this. How much money do you need to earn each month? Huh? That's what IncomeAtHome.com wants to know. They'll help you make that happen. IncomeAtHome.com is America's leading work-from-home business. They have an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau. They're affiliated with a multi-billion dollar company. Plus, they do business in over 80 countries. The bottom line is this. They are legit. Your age, education, experience, it doesn't matter. You can do this. You can literally earn money on your computer from your kitchen table 24/7. Even while you sleep, there's no pressure. All you need is a little spare time and their one-on-one coaching to earn great money from home. Hey, look, if you're sick of living paycheck to paycheck, if you're worried about job security or retirement, if you're ready to make great money from home, part-time or full, IncomeAtHome.com is adding my listeners in record numbers. They're even giving away $1,000 to someone. You hear that? Just for checking them out. So check them out. Check them out. That's IncomeAtHome.com.
Savage.
You got to laugh at some mild infirmities. You know, a guy gets in a fight when he's a kid. He gets a tooth knocked out. What are you going to do about it? Nothing. It's a tooth. That's all. That's all. It's only a tooth. It's nothing. It could have been worse. Because I remember when I was a kid, like 18, 15, you know, I never thought I'd live past 40. I really didn't. Come from a family of horrendous male longevity. I don't blame them. It was just the way it is. So my friends and I used to joke. We used to joke when we were kids. We'd look at older men, guys over 30, some of whom were bald. And I remember saying to my friend, and I said, you know what? I'm not worried about baldness because I'll probably never live that long. And we used to joke about it. I swear, young guys are funny. We always had a fatalistic view of things. But as time... And there was another story I'll tell you from that era. I remember I told you I had a friend whose father was the tough guy in the whole, like, thing in the ghetto. All the other guys had little stores or little jobs. This guy owned a bar on the Upper East Side of Manhattan before it was cool. He was a professional bar owner wearing a suit, not a bartender, a gambler. He was a real, you know... let's say, cool type of guy, but he was a man's man. So naturally, the boys would gravitate to the toughest of the men, because boys will. Boys will always be drawn to the tough guy. I didn't say nasty, I didn't say evil, but the toughest man is usually the tribal leader anyway. So guys liked him. He had a manly way about him. He talked quietly, never spoke loud, hardly spoke at all. And sometimes when the families would get together in those days, all the families very often got together on weekends in someone's apartment or house.
Savage.
Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
I hate haircuts. They're like prison to me. They remind me of a barber I used to go to as a kid in the Bronx. Every time I went, he pushed my head down. I hate they take your head and push it down with the scissor. There was something about it even then. I was stiff-necked. The barber would take the head, even when I was a little kid, and press down. I hated it. I would fight his hand with my neck. My father would stand over me. All right, put your head down. No, I don't want to put my head down. Put your head down. No, I don't want to put my... And the clipper would go behind the ear. I hated barbers with the razor, with the strop. They had the strop in those days. You know, I knew there was something crazy. It was like... Shh, 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 with that leather thing, with that long razor. I don't know. It was like a freaky thing. What man would, like, submit to that? Even when you were a kid, they shaved your sideburns with that long razor. I like that machine, though, the smell. I can smell it's like Petite Madeleine, you know, the smell of that lather, of the foam on. I can still smell it to this day. When they would turn that machine on, they had that, like, little, I used to wait for the end of the haircut. They would turn the machine on and give me that little shaving cream next to the sideburn, because you felt like a man at that point. That they were going to shave you. You know, you're 5 years old, but even you needed a little shave by the side, when you felt like so proud of yourself at that point. But the barber, I hate, the reason I hate, because they put, the hair would go down my neck, A, I hated it, number one. Number two, there was a real reason I hated barbers to this day, the mirror thing. Did I tell you the mirror story? I sat in the chair, to this day, mirror in front of me, mirror behind me. So I'd look in the mirror and I'd get the whole thing going, the infinity thing. I would like almost faint in the chair. I'd look forward, then I'd look backwards. I saw myself diminishing forever, backwards through the mirror. I almost fainted in the chair. They didn't know what I was experiencing as a child. Now, a child who perceives things like this today would no doubt be called mentally ill. And they'd put him on a drug in order to turn him into a good Democrat, socialist, switch hitter, who believes in global warming and would vote for Barack Obama. But in those days, I didn't even tell anybody what I saw. I would look in the mirror, and I almost fainted. Then the barber, because I squirmed around in the chair, pulled out a thing. Hey, look at this, Michael. Look at this, Michael. And he pulled out, look at this. It's King Tut inside the tomb. They always had, like, jokes and tricks. I suspected that after work, he probably did things with children that were really, I don't know. I suspected that after work, you know, it was something about the mustache. You know, and he wasn't married. I don't want to go into it. I just suspected that after work, that barber probably wasn't up and up because he had too many toys and gimmicks in the drawer and the mirrors. I don't know. There was something, trick, maybe a mirror turned and there was a magic room there. I have no idea. But to this day, I hate haircuts. I'm looking an hour from now. I'm canceling it. The minute I get off the air, I'm canceling. It's not a day for a haircut. I can't go in there. Even though it's a Chinese woman barber and she's good, I'm not going near it. I am not getting a haircut. I'm just not in the mood for a haircut tonight. Are the shameless shopaholics really happy? An article from England. Stupid women who shop from day to night, believing that devoting every spare hour to shopping will make them happy. Idiots. Are the shameless shopaholics really happy? Yeah, it's the consumer culture. I was never into that. I try to buy something this week. I don't know what's wrong with me. I have trouble buying things. I wear the same clothing for years. I'm comfortable in it. I know it doesn't look as good. So I went out. I forced myself to buy four pair of pants the other day. And I came home. I looked at them. And I proceeded to hang them up and put them in the back of the closet. I'm saving them for an important day. I don't know what that day may be, but I'm saving them. Then I buy a new pair of sneakers. That took an hour. I almost died till he found the right size. This size, take that size, and the width, a D, an E, a double. I didn't have the old ones. Finally, I bought a pair. I said, oh, fine. Just give them to me, please. You're very nice. Put them in a bag. Then I got a yen to buy a pair of shoes like an idiot. I bought something that looked good. They look like an elf shoe. I went back to like the 60s. There was like an elf shoe. Like, I knew better.
Oh, that looks good. I'll wear them around the house. I was crippled from them. I put them on for 5 minutes. I couldn't walk. So I had to return them. I had to have them returned today. And it was a strange thing. Did I tell you what the dog did while the guy was trying to shoe on my foot? The first time I put my foot down on that little stand they have for the shoe, Teddy was with me. It was a Nordstrom's. He didn't do anything. Then the next time the guy said, try the other foot on, and I put the other foot down, Teddy jumped between the foot and the guy's hands. So I try to think, what in the world does a dog perceive? What was he perceiving? So I thought maybe, trying to project my Darwinian mind to the dog, he probably thought the guy was taking my foot by putting it into a with an instrument. What does he know? He's a stranger with a thing in his hand, taking his master's foot into an object called a shoe, and then like sealing it up with a lace. So he figured that was no good. It was dangerous. Then there was a miserable woman there, a middle-aged hag with two dogs, that gives dog owners a bad name in department stores. You know, it's a privilege to let you bring a dog at a department store, and I'm really glad they do, because guys like me are good owners. This piece of garbage, she was from New York living in Marin. I knew the type. I saw right away where she was. She was Gertz all the way. I don't care where she lived. She could live in the best community. This woman was Gertz. It was Gertz, Gertz, Gertz. She had Gertz on her soul. So she has two rat dogs with her, one like a Maltese yapper. My dog doesn't bark. They start barking at my dog. No, here's what starts. I'm getting my shoes on, and Teddy's minding his business. And she looks over from like 25 yards away. I don't know where. They have eagle eyes, these Gertz women, the shopaholics. And she looks over, and she says something like out loud, like she knows me. What kind of dog is that? So I'm like, what kind of dog is that? So I said, take a guess. She wants to play Brooklyn with me. I can answer in Brooklyn. What kind of dog is that? Like, she's familiar already. I said, why don't you take a guess? So she says, a poodle? So I say, nothing. The best answer to that type is, the middle verb. Nothing. All right, so she don't say anything, but I see she's seething already that no one answered, that I didn't answer her. Maybe she's trying to pick me up. What do I know? I'm not interested, lady. You know? A few minutes later, she walks by, and right away, the dogs start barking, her dogs. You know what she has the nerve to say out loud? Oh, honey, you don't like that dog, do you? Meaning her dog didn't like my dog. Now, I could have gotten mad, but I control myself, and I say, this is why I don't buy anything. It's why I don't go out of the house. It's why I become a recluse and do takeout. I can't take it. People are mean everywhere, wherever you go. I mean, the clerks are nice in these stores. They're very nice guys. I don't know how they put up with people. I can't imagine what they must have to do at night to get over what they have to put up with. Well, oh, I don't even want to think about it. To make up for what they have to go through with being nice to people in these stores. I don't know how they get people to do it anymore. Then I always get sad in that department store because they have a piano player. It breaks my heart to hear it. I see a grown man sitting at a piano in the middle of the day, and I have the kind of kaleidoscopic mind. I know that this kid, it was like, let's say he was a C-talent musician. But he's like 45, good-looking guy in a tuxedo, playing in a department store. So all I don't see that. I see sadness coming my way. Why? I see all the way back to the first grade, kindergarten, preschool. Oh, look at that. Billy's talented. Let's take lessons. And the mother and father kill themselves. They pay for the lessons. And they encourage him to go to the high school of performing farts and blah, blah, blah. And the kid becomes an artiste and he struggles his whole life. And he's living on next to nothing. And here he is, 45, playing a piano in a department store. I'm not putting the guy down, but I hear the music and I get depressed. I don't want to hear the music there. I don't want to hear a piano in a department store because I don't just see the guy. I see like a whole tragedy there. Well, what are you going to do? I guess they pay him something. I have no idea. So I'm not a shopaholic is what I'm saying.
Savage.
So I'm reading the paper, the electronic paper, Italy's new dining experience, high security. Rome. Diners are flocking to what can be called the most exclusive restaurant in Italy, one located inside a top security prison where the chefs and waiters are mafiosi, robbers and murderers. Serenaded by Bruno, a pianist doing life for murder, the clientele eat inside a deconsecrated chapel set behind a 60-foot high. Why would they deconsecrate a chapel? Anyway. Set behind the 60-foot-high walls,
of the daunting 500-year-old Fortezza Medicea at Volterra near Pisa. Under the watchful eye of armed prison guards, a 20-strong team of chefs, kitchen hands, and waiters nightly serve 120 diners who all have undergone strict security checks. Tables are booked weeks in advance. Prison director Maria Grazia Giampiccolo said the inmates have developed a flair for their cooking. He said, I feel haute cuisine in a place like this prepares the inmates for when they are eventually released. The guests enjoy their meals, and although the security seems at first very daunting and imposing, they get over it quite quickly and forget about the guards. The mafia may be in charge, but there is no horse's head on this menu. Instead, a smart, mainly middle-aged crowd tucks into a vegetarian signature menu cooked up by head chef Egidio, serving Life for Murder and competitively priced at $33. The restaurant opened 2 months ago and has proved so popular that Italy's prison department is thinking of trying it in other prisons. I got to laugh for a minute because this can only happen in Italy, where food is life. Now, if you went to a prison in America and you had the criminals in this country cooking, can you imagine what you want to be eating? Jell-O. You'd eat Jell-O and candy bars. That would be their idea of haute cuisine. It's not Italy. Securing a table is as tricky as getting past the sternest maitre d'. Diners are thoroughly vetted by the blah, blah, blah. But there's no danger of the meal being disrupted by the annoying chirrup of cell phones. You hear this? They have to be handed in. Oh, I'd love to eat in this joint. Along with handbags, and I would like to eat here. If only I could go to a restaurant where some idiot moron from hell didn't talk on a phone. Blah, 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 I'm so important. And yeah, I'm going to Zurich. Yeah, I just got back from Atlanta. Yeah, I spoke to... Yeah, blah, 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 blah. I feel like pouring coffee into their cell phone. Why do they let them even talk? It's one of the reasons I go to restaurants. I can't listen to people. I'm in a talk business. So when I'm through working, I don't want to listen to chatter. But most people have jobs where they can't talk. So what they do is they have a glass of wine already for $6. Blah, 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 blah. Shoot their mouth. I give them two glasses of wine. They don't shut up. Then you get hit with a bad perfume on top of it all that wafts over and you got a double migraine and there's no point in eating there. Give me this prison. It sounds like a good place to go. Handbags. The diners go through the same thing. In the kitchen, Egidio, a burly 50-year-old from Taranto in Southern, reigns over his team of six chefs. He screams, the pasta is boiling over. More salt, less garlic. Keep stirring the pasta sauce, he shouts. 17 years into his sentence, he is thinking of going into the restaurant business when they finally let him out. Like any Italian, I take my food very, very seriously. I like to be sure the diners are satisfied. And they don't just enjoy the food, but enjoy it with the same passion that I prepare it. Wow, the guy sounds more articulate than George Bush. He's in for a murder sentence. He's a prisoner in Italy. Maybe we could elect him to office here. He could form an entire sentence. Perhaps unsurprisingly, given his record, diners have been reluctant to criticize. He said, before this, I couldn't even fry an egg. But now here I am preparing five-course dinners, and I have not had any complaints. It could be because they know who he is. Yo, it's delicious, Adige. Oh, I love it. Oh, yeah, it's great. Terrific. Yeah, tell him that his food's no good. Most of the dishes the restaurant serves are southern Italian staples from organized crime hotspots like Puglia, Sicily, and Naples. Sommelier Santolo Matroni from Naples landed behind bars after getting into, quote, a spot of bother when he was younger, which earned him a 24-year sentence for murder. He, too, is hoping to use his new skills when he gets out in about 7 years. He says, I'd like to think that when I get out of here, I can start a family, maybe get a job in a restaurant or hotel. Hey, you should come to America, you know. It's the kind of immigrant we need. The unique nature of the restaurant has imposed some restrictions. Guards watch over the inmates in the kitchens at all times, and the cutlery used as plastic as other plates, said Mr. Giampiccolo. Yeah. The main thing is trust, and we trust the inmates to behave. If we didn't, we would not allow this to happen. Yeah, well, I'll tell you the subtext in a minute. Diners profess themselves delighted. When I heard about it, I thought it sounded fun, so we booked a table, and I have to say the food has been very good, said off-duty police officer, blah, blah, blah. The fact that the dishes are prepared by murderers, armed robbers, mafiosi, or terrorists doesn't really bother me, though I might be worried if someone had been convicted of poisoning. And that's it. Italy's new dining experience, high security. For years, I would go past Alcatraz Island, and I would think to myself, my God, what a great restaurant this would make here instead of a waste. Why don't they just let some restaurant guy open up Alcatraz, and you take a boat to it and eat there? In San Francisco, in fact, they could probably rent out the cells for the night with horses. You know, and then they could be running the movie They Shoot Horses, don't they? So I had a dream. It was a weird dream. And I'll make it simple. Many of you don't care about my affairs. Some of you do. Here it is. It was like a prophetic dream for me, and I'm sharing it with you because I want to know what you think of it. I'm standing with an Iraqi man. He was clearly an Iraqi man. There were four children, and they were little children. They were under 5 years old, and they were all trying to throw stones at me. They did not know who I was, but I was not of them. I was not Iraqi. I was different. I was not one of them. I was an outsider. The children had large brown stones, and they were sort of waddling over with these large stones, trying to throw them at my feet. They were big stones. They were brown stones. The children could hardly lift them up. And these little children had no eyes. Their eyes looked ghoulish. They looked like they had no soul. They were blindly hating the outsider. They were the golem. They were the golem. They were the soulless. They hated the non-Iraqi, the non-Muslim. And they were walking and stumbling, trying to drop these rocks at my feet. Suddenly, one of the four boys put the rock down. The Iraqi father and I looked at each other, and we got on the ground, and we almost started to cry. We started to pray to God, he in his way, and me in my way. We realized that there was one child amongst them who could break free of the chain of hatred. In essence, he was the Messiah of the Iraqi people, perhaps the Messiah of the Muslim people. I was almost to cry with joy that finally one of them was not hateful and murderous. The Muslim father, who was a good man, was crying with joy. He saw hope for his people, that hatred could be, perhaps, they could be led out of hatred by their own Messiah. And then this child who dropped the rock and didn't want to hit me with it started to drool and drool and drool. And I couldn't stand the drooling. And I got up and I said, I can't wait for this. I can't take this. I don't like drool. I can't wait for the child to grow up and stop drooling. And I got up and the dream ended. I'll let you interpret the savage dream of the drooling child because I know what it means.
Wait, hang on before I go.
Mother's Day is coming up. Now is the time to show all the moms in our lives how much we appreciate them. Our mothers, mothers-in-laws, wives. Now's the time to make them feel special with a beautiful floral bouquet from 1-800-Flowers.com. Don't settle for less. Send the best. Moms are going to love the rose and lily bouquet from 1-800-Flowers.com. She'll love this beautiful bouquet from 1-800-Flowers.com. 1-800-Flowers.com has a very special offer just for my listeners. You order the rose and lily bouquet, and you get a free clear vase for only $34.99. That's $25 off the regular price. For this or other Mother's Day offers, go to 1-800-Flowers.com. Click on the radio microphone in the upper right corner and enter Savage.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
I was taken to an Italian place in Las Vegas, way out in the desert. And this place was not very fancy. In fact, the strange part about it was... It had a sign for a ball team somewhere in Cleveland, Ohio, on the top of the building. You get the picture?
Right.
No,
no,
right.
That's not the one.
No, but, wait, but you know what I'm talking about, right?
Absolutely.
So I said to myself, why would they have a sign for a Cleveland team in Las Vegas, Nevada, unless it was like a billboard for people who were from Cleveland? Now, since I'm not from Cleveland, but I know that there's good Italian food in Cleveland, I went to the restaurant. I got to tell you, this sauce was really old-style, heavy-duty, unleaded sauce. There was no one in there, let me put it to you this way, with an earring in their ear. Can I put it to you that way? There were no guys with earrings in there, Matt?
Well, exactly. You know, you got to kiss the ring when you walk in, pretty much, in this place.
Oh, so you know the joint. I know the food was very good. The pizza I didn't care for. It was very doughy. It was old-style 50s pizza. It was not this crispy American pizza of today. It was the old style with a heavy dough. I didn't care for it. But I liked the food. It was the unleaded red sauce. It was on the road out towards the community college. I don't know the name of it, but I really enjoyed that place.
I mean, the restaurants out here in Vegas are the best. So
they are. Absolutely. They are very good. And that's because the people come there with a lot of money to blow, and they want good food, and they're willing to pay for it. So you've had some of the best chefs turn up out there in some of the top restaurants, and the people demand it, and frankly, you're not going to be disappointed if you know where to go. I agree with you.
And ask the locals, you know, where to go. Ask your waiter. Ask the people.
I did.
Come.
That's how I wound up in that restaurant. I asked a fellow I met with a size 22 neck who looked like he was in The Sopranos. I happened to run into him in the elevator in a building I was in. That's how I wound up out there.
I
so thank you for the... It was good. I haven't been there in years. I haven't gone there in years, but there's another place I go to near the where they took the two New York homicide detectives out in jumpsuits. I had to try it. I had to see the joint. It was good. The food's very good. But when they get busy, you can't get good service. That's the problem. I went to the barber the other day, Tuesday. I let my hair grow very long. It was very long, like long. I look like just a long-haired guy, older guy with long hair. Now, it's like a thing with hair, men and their hair. Naturally, I'm a little older, so the hair's a little thinning in the front. I'm not bald by any means. I still have a full head of hair. But it was very long, okay? And I'm starting to, I'm looking at myself in the mirror, do I like it? I don't like it. When I start to get to that point already where it's an issue of vanity, it's time to cut it off. So I go to the – I hadn't been to the barber for a couple of months, to be honest with you. I binge with haircuts. I let it grow for months, then I cut it. So then I have a beard, okay? I've had this beard since I'm 18 years old. I grew the beard originally because I was becoming a seventh-grade teacher, and I was very smart and skipped two grades. I was only 20, and I was going to teach the seventh grade. I looked like I was 15. So I grew a beard, a goatee, to go into the school so I didn't look like one of the kids. Now I'm no longer 17. I'm no longer 20. I don't need the beard, I say to myself, but I don't want to cut it off. No one will recognize me. So I go to the barber. There's a Chinese lady in her 50s in a barber shop in the city, and there's another Chinese lady. Both of them have cut my hair over the year. And we start to chat, blah, 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 blah. So I said, okay, just trim the back. Now, I don't know how you could ever get a barber to do what you want. You got to watch him like a hawk. If you doze off, you wake up, you look like a skinhead, no matter what you say. I said, look, just trim the curls in the back and call it a day. Okay, very quick. She starts with the trim, then right away, well, I have to do that, and then that, then I have to spin here, then boom, the clip. I said, please don't touch the top. I don't know if you never, if you're a guy, you know what I'm talking about. Guys with their hair, you don't even know. Women know, but guys, you don't realize what guys have to go through to get a haircut. So don't touch it, don't clip here, then that. Then all of a sudden, it's already getting shorter, and I like it. I said, you know what? How would I look without a beard? So she says, she looks for a minute. She puts a towel over my face under the nose. And she says, you would look 20 years younger. So now this is a huge decision. I got to tell you this. So I call over the other woman. They talk in Chinese. They both say you would look 20 years younger. I'm in a crazed mood. I was suffering from allergies. I was depressed again. The allergies. I said, I cut my beard off. She says, are you sure? I said, yes. So she starts with the hot towels over my face. I figure it's going to be an assassination, like Anastasia in a barber chair. I never had a hot towel treatment like this. She gave me 5 hot towels over the face. It, you know, relaxes every muscle in your body, a hot towel on your face. Did you know that? It's better than a massage. 5 hot towels, steaming hot, just with the nose, and my limbs are relaxed. Now she gets out the straight razor that she's going to really do. I'm talking a shave here. We're talking about New York, circa 1950, the dons go in for the shave every morning. This was amazing. I never had one of these. I'm used to a regular guy, electric, occasionally a little trim with the throwaway. She's got that thing going, and I'm my neck's up. So I'm looking at the door. I'm afraid who's going to come through the door. And there it is. I get up. I don't recognize myself. Now, I did this once before. 20 years ago, I had the same bug. I shaved off the beard. I came home, and my daughter, who was a kid, screamed. She started to cry and screamed. She had never seen me. I was afraid the dog was going to bite me this time. But here's the beautiful thing about dogs. When I got home that night, Teddy knew who I was. He didn't see the beard, no beard. He smelled my hand. That's the beauty of dogs, is that they're half blind, and everything with them is a smell. Fortunately, they could not remove my scent with a razor. They could only remove my beard. So here I am, beardless in Gaza, so to speak. And I'm trying to understand how I look, how I feel, and I kind of like it. On the other hand, I don't like it. That's what's going on in my life. Beard, no shit. Barbershops are interesting. Guys never talk about getting a haircut, what you go through. Older men don't talk about it. It's like, all right, just cut my hair. Give me a trim. But if you're younger, guys are very, very picky about hair, believe me. And I'll tell you something else you don't know about guys and their hair. You don't know this. Because I am a trained anthropologist prior to becoming all of the other professions I was. I had a master's degree, a really good one, in social anthropology. And in my years of searching in the South Pacific, I got very involved with the folklore, and I started to search out photographs from the 1880s, 1890s era in Fiji. The Fijian men, who are Melanesian, they're black-skinned men, and they're very, very statuesque men, and very vain at that, as they should be. I mean, these guys are like Adonises, by and large. was so picky about their hair in the pre-colonial times, and in the literally in the post-missionary times, there were some pictures taken of them. These guys spent a lot of time every day on their dues, man. And they really worked it. They shaved their hair in certain ways. They put combs through their hair in certain ways. Just as the Maori were very, very picky on the kind of tattoos they had and were allowed to have, the Fijian men were very, very heavily into their hair, as are virtually every Native American tribe, as are the men in every Native American tribe then and now. And frankly, if you go around the world, men are very picky about their hair. But the thing is, in America, we're still into like it's too like gay to talk about your hair. But frankly, it's very masculine to talk about your hair. And the barber is your biggest enemy. You're afraid you're going to blink off and wake up with a baldy.
Wait, hang on before I go.
Listen to this.
Mother's Day will be here soon, and Michael Savage made sure Mrs. Savage is getting Sherry's Berries. Sherry's Berries aren't just impressive, they're delicious. And Michael Savage has a special offer from Sherry's Berries just for you. But you must order this week. Don't wait. Send giant dipped strawberries from Sherry's Berries starting at just $19.99. That's more than 40% in savings. Sherry's Berries are huge, fresh, and juicy. They're dipped in white, milk, and dark chocolate and topped with chocolate chips or nuts. Just go to berries.com, click on the radio microphone, and type in Savage. Tell the mom in your life thank you for everything she does. And if you order now, Savage Radio listeners can double their berries for just $10 more. Don't be too busy for mom. Get Sherry's Berries starting at just $19.99. Call 866-FRUIT-02 or visit berries.com. That's berries.com. Click on the microphone in the top right corner and click Savage. Go to berries.com, click on the microphone, and type in Savage. Order now. Offer expires midnight on Friday.
This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
Even before we got bin Laden, we had Al-Qaeda on its heels. And by getting bin Laden, we capped off that two-year campaign. That was important. That makes us safer. Did it completely diminish all risk of terrorism? Absolutely not. But all told, a year later, are we better off, are we safer because we got bin Laden? Absolutely.
Fareed, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, hello. Thanks, Michael. I just wanted to say that, firstly, I listen to your show regularly, and I'm a moderate Muslim in America, and I think that you're one of the most, let's say, honest first people in the media today. The one thing I wanted to comment on is that with respect to moderate Muslims, they feel under tremendous pressure in the U.S. and in general in Europe as well. And that is because, obviously, of what the radical guys are doing. And what I just wanted to say to you is that, you know, you do talk about radical Islam on your show frequently, is to kind of distinguish that from the kind of mainstream normal Muslims living in America who are kind of normal people.
Listen, you don't have to sell me on that because I know a few people who are of Islamic tradition. Practicing the Muslim religion, if you want to put it to that, the Islamic religion. But, you know, there's a differential. I bet you're a little older, Fareed.
Yes.
I'm sorry, what are you, in your 50s?
Yeah, I'm in my 50s.
That's what I'm saying. You see, you come from another generation that was not radicalized. But there's a whole generation of converts to Islam who have been converted by Wahhabi preachers who are preaching revolution. You, as a man in the middle, which is what you really are here, are under greater pressure than we non-Muslims are, to put it in those terms.
Yes, I would agree with you on that, Michael. And, you know, what I would simply say to you is that there are a lot of people in the Muslim community who are absolutely fed up with what the throwbacks are doing. You know,
oh, God bless you. Absolutely. Look, Fareed, I've tried to say that over and over again. You know, for many, many years, there were Muslims in America who never, not only didn't try to overthrow the government, not only didn't try to drag the country
into the 9th century, but were just like everybody else, but they just had a different religion. They went about their business, much as Jews do, much as Hindus do, Buddhists do. No one, you know, heard from them. You know what I'm saying? They practiced their religion. Now, all of a sudden, we have this virulent America hatred coming into the mosques, and you know where it's coming from. I'm sure you see it around you, and you don't know what to do about it.
You see, the issue, Michael, what has happened is, unfortunately, that in a lot of the preacher community, particularly in some of the Muslim countries as well, a lot of the very uneducated people went into and became preachers. And
yes. Absolutely. And they believe in the self-sufficiency of the book, the Quran. They're living in the 7th or 8th century. They're throwbacks. Not only are they a threat to the Western world, they're a threat primarily to guys like you. You're under a greater threat than I am because you're in the direct line of fire.
Absolutely. And what I would say is that there is...
Hold on. Fareed, this is very important for my audience to hear. It's all tied to the demand for cheap labor. That's what it is. Make no mistake about it. The people running the factories want cheap labor. Unfortunately, they're creating economic strife as well as economic advantage. And the economic strife and the social strife and religious strife are very serious side effects of the primary disease called illegal immigration.
To continue, Michael, I'm just saying that also with respect to, for example, the Middle East issue, the view of a lot of moderate Muslims, particularly in America as well as Europe, is that, you know, there should be peace with Israel at the sooner rather than later. And I can tell you that there are a lot of people, even in the Middle East, in countries which are, let's say, the moderate countries, who are pursuing an initiative. Even as we speak, we have the foreign minister of Israel in Washington this week. We also have the national...
Well, let me say this. You know, let me say this on that issue. There are many other issues other than the Middle East that agitate, that are agitating the world. For example, Muslims at war with their Hindu neighbors over Kashmir, Muslims at war with their Philippine neighbors over the Philippine Islands, the Muslim problem with Russia, nothing to do with Israel. But, you know, value-wise, Fareed, I will bet that you raised your family very similar, in a very similar manner to how I raised. I bet your family values are similar to mine.
Absolutely, absolutely. They're exactly similar. And I tell you, Michael, that I personally feel at the end of the day that it should be a value-driven society. It should be driven by the highest common denominator. In other words, you know, principles of love, tolerance, goodness are universal.
Yes, but you're a classically educated man. It doesn't really matter what your religion is. You understand tolerance. You hit the nail on the head earlier when you said many of these imams are throwback little old men with dirty beards who are illiterates, who latched onto a Quran and suddenly made themselves into holy men. They're the people trying to pull the world back into the 7th or 8th century. I have a couple of things I want to tell you about. A, how I just survived coffee at a Starbucks in San Francisco. This took the patience of Job. Before the show, I went down. I do almost everything myself to know what Life 101 really is. I could hire someone. But, you know, I figured out it's actually good for me to otherwise I wind up like George Bush Sr. Wow, golly be gee, that's a checkout stand in a supermarket. Whoa, cool. Wow, that's a laser. Ooh. No, I got to go buy coffee and see how you people suffer, fools, ungladly. Just before the show, I ran out for a Starbucks. Now, I survived Starbucks. It's not easy, I got to tell you. I'm in a rush. It's like, you know, 20 minutes before the show. I should have sent someone out for it, but I tend to work alone. I like to be alone. I ran out for a coffee. I figured I could sneak in at that time, though. And bingo, I hit three people ahead of me, and a girl jumps in ahead of me. And the three people, everyone's cute. And what kind of the sweet do you want? I think, and there were men, and everyone was with a cute, no one would say, just give me the blueberry cake or give me the oatmeal cookie. Everything was like with a cutesy thing. Oh, I think I'll have the... Oh, you're such a sweetie pie. All right, so I had to live through them. The feet were curling up inside the shoe on that one. I don't say anything. So now there's only one in front of me. And did I hit the lottery with her? I figured she looked normal. She was going to say, coffee and get out of there. But no, here it was. I'll have a double grande latte espresso decaf with extra low-fat cream and extra foam and a soy blast sprinkle, please. I'm not making this up. I said, no, Now I'm getting enraged inside. My eyes are already searching to take it out on something. Again, she repeated. The guy didn't even know what she said. That's right. And a sweet voice on it. I'll have a double grande latte espresso decaf with extra low-fat cream and extra foam and a soy blast sprinkle, please. And then, to top it off, after the guy makes it for her, she pulls out a coupon, a transgender discount. In San Francisco, the mayor gives out transgender discount coupons. Insane societies, they used to give out discount coupons to war veterans. In this city, they give them out to transgendered people. That's right. In San Francisco, TGIF has a new meaning. That's right. TGIF has a new meaning in San Francisco. Prior to surviving Starbucks, I did something even more threatening to my psyche, which was I went to Fisherman's. I got into the city early, so I went by bicycle to Fisherman's Wharf. I haven't been there for a year. I stopped going for about a year. I went once this year. And I went and had a bowl of clam chowder soup and some joint near the water. The guy gave me a bowl of cornstarch with the droppings of a clam in it. I don't know how they didn't get arrested for this. How do they sell this on Fisherman's Wharf? Then the nerve of this mutt, he says to me, do you want a cup or a bowl? I was in a rush. I was on the phone. I said, give me a cup. The cup was $5.95. A bowl would have been a dollar more.
Wait, hang on before I go. Back in September, we all paused to remember the 9/11 attacks. That one day changed the very way we all live and think. In fact, the Red Cross now recommends that we have a surplus of food in case of disaster, weather, or power outages. That's why I recommend and personally use WiseFoodStorage.com. WiseFoodStorage.com provides affordable and complete delicious ready-made meals for emergencies or even camping. I know more about food than anybody in radio. I have a PhD from the University of California in nutrition. These foods are nutritionally sound for good health. Visit WiseFoodStorage.com. Get a free entree sample by entering the promo code SAVAGE, and then you'll get free shipping on any order. SAVAGE. WiseFoodStorage.com or call 855-FOODWISE, and be sure to mention SAVAGE for a free sample and free shipping on any order. Be wise and be ready with WiseFoodStorage.com.
Savage.